Did you know the FBI believes there are as many as 25 serial killers active at any given time? However, the Murder Accountability Project believes that number to be closer to 2,000. Welcome. I'm Jay.
I'm T.
We are Fatal Blend.
This is where we talk about two things we absolutely love. A little bit of coffee and a lot of true crime. Specifically, serial killers.
So let's get into it. What are we drinking today? Tonight, because it's late, I decided to just stick with water.
Yeah, we're kind of boring on this one. First episode and we both are drinking water, but that's because... truth, we are new at this, so we decided to record this at night, and it's just too late to be drinking coffee. So, no coffee, water.
And speaking of being new, let us give you a little bit something about us. We're a husband and wife team. We love true crime, love to watch it, love to listen to it, love to research about it, and we just decided we wanted to share it with other people that love the same thing, so we're going to give this a crack and see where it goes. We're going to be raw, unfiltered, and hopefully a little bit of fun. For me, I'll be hearing a lot of these stories for the first time, just like you. And, T, she does, a lot of the research and gathers all the information. So hopefully some of the reactions I have will be similar to yours, and, we'll get through this. So let's go ahead and dive into the first person we're going to talk about. Ooh, but like I said, we're going to be raw and unfiltered. So speaking of raw, let's get into stuff that's happening closer to home, you know, something that's a little more current event. I wouldn't necessarily say closer to home, but current event.
I mean, technically it's closer to home because it's happened in the state we live in. And this is something that we're going to honestly try to do is there's always some crazy true crime thing going on in the world because this is, let's face it, the world we live in. So, there is a small town in Washington. And again, we are located in Washington. And there was a woman who was found dead in her home. She was found by her husband who had happened to come home in the evening and found her dead. And anytime something like this happens, anytime a true crime comes up, you bet your bottom dollar that I am sucked into it right away. So Jay and I oftentimes will talk about it. And we had read the very initial story and something just did not seem right. So I made a comment of, it's kind of weird that this guy came home late at night and he just happened to have a friend with him and he found his wife. And I was like, hey, plot twist, let's just say, what if he did it? Or what if he paid somebody to kill his wife?
Well, and you know all the true crime detective sleuths out there on the internet and listening to the news. That's the first thought we always had. It's never, never what the story is. We're always digging into it.
Yes. And 2 days later, it came out that they had arrested the husband and they also arrested a man in connection with the murder. And after serving 2 search warrants on the house, they actually found that the husband and the man that was suspected of killing her are friends. And that the husband picked the man up in Eugene, Oregon earlier in the day that the woman was killed. So they have them both in custody now, and they are looking at the connection of potentially pressing murder charges on the husband because they, as of now, believe that he had worked out a plan with his friend. So again, just a win for the true crime sleuths out there who figure this out well before the cops typically do.
All right. So let's go ahead and get into our first serial killer we want to talk about.
Okay.
Speaking of being close to
home. Being close to home. So we thought it would be kind of fun since we're just starting and this is the very first episode for us. Why not do something that hits in our state? Because Washington... I don't know how many they actually have, but Washington is like, I feel like is one of those states that like breeds serial killers. Like people are born here and then I don't know if they go, I don't know, but they basically, there's quite a few that are born here, but we decided let's do one about somebody who killed in the state of Washington. And also I didn't want to do like Ted Bundy or anything like that because, he's just so well known. This is somebody that I, and actually Jay had never heard of. And so this was great. So we're going to get into Billy Gull. Okay, Billy Gull is known as the Ghoul of Gray's Harbor, or also known as the Timbertown Killer. His crimes happened in Aberdeen, Washington. And so if you don't know anything about Washington, Aberdeen is like in the middle of the state, but like towards the west coast. It's actually a port town, and I believe during this time especially, it was actually a fairly large port town. Pretty much everybody that came in and out of Aberdeen came through the rivers and the Gray's Harbor area. And the, yeah, anyways, so it is believed that he has killed anywhere from 2 to 100 people. I promise you, I will explain that because that is a very big difference.
It's quite a spread.
It is. And he went on a murder spree for about 8 years between 1902 to 1910. They actually don't know very many of the people he murdered. They don't have any names. They only actually have named two, which is why it's the two, but the upwards of 100, because you'll hear as we continue to talk about, you'll figure it out. Also, there is not a lot known about Billy. Really, truly, when I was researching, I looked at multiple articles, multiple stories, and I kind of had to piece together the most common information to kind of put this together. So first of all, his date of birth. There was like 3 different dates, and so I came up with the most common one. So what they know supposedly is that he was born February 6th, 1873. The only thing about his life before his crimes was that he was a very large man. Well, large for the 1900s, early 1900s. He was 6'2" and big. So in our day now, 6'2" is not shit, but back then 6'2" was big, and he was burly. So that's about the only stuff about his actual background that I could find. So he moved to Aberdeen, Washington in 1902. He had lived a short time in the Yukon, and he was a bartender there. Then moved on to Aberdeen and was a bartender for a very short amount of time in Aberdeen. And for those of you who'd like to know, Aberdeen's population in 1902 was 4,000 people. We looked it up.
Population now is 17,000. So definitely quite a bit bigger of a city, but by all means, not a large city.
Yeah. And to be fair, we are not from Aberdeen. So we had to look this stuff up because I actually have never been to Aberdeen, if I'm being honest. I think I've driven through it maybe, but I've never been there, but it was a smaller port. And again, 4,000 people, that's, I don't know, I guess if I'm thinking in the 1900s, maybe that was actually a larger city with 4,000 people. I don't know. I'm thinking like 1900s. I feel like there was less people on the planet, but I don't know. Shortly after his move there, and being a bartender, he actually was able to secure a career as the official agent for the Sailors Union of the Pacific. So they had a big union building right off the river where the sailors who were coming in, like through their travels, they would come in, and his job was to help them with anything they needed, find them places to stay, direct them in the direction of the bars, the saloons, the pubs, the hotels, whatever. And then also, these sailors a lot of the times would be coming off of a ship where they just did a job. And so they would have money, valuables that they can't leave on the ship. So his job was to take and secure these things for them. And so When the sailors would come in, he would literally give them all the questions. Where are they from? How long have they been out? Do they have family? And then he was very, very particular about who he chose for his victims, because he wanted to get people who didn't have a lot of family, wouldn't be missed right away, and definitely nobody who lived close to the Aberdeen area. And he seemed to really take his job seriously. He would fight for the sailors. If there was an issue, like if they got in a bar fight, he would go there and he'd jump in and he'd protect them. And he was very, again, big, burly brute man. And he was there to make sure the sailors, they were taken care of. However, the ones that he chose as his victims were not so lucky, because basically when they would hand over their valuables or tell him what it is they want him to hold and carry for him, if he deemed them as one of his victims, he oftentimes shot them in the back as they were getting ready to leave the Union building, right as soon, like as they were there, like when they first came in. And then he would take them, and behind the Union building, it was either on the dock or in the back of the building, they had like a trap door that had a chute that led right into the it's the Gray's Harbor area. It's two rivers. The Chehalis River comes in, and I think it's pronounced the Wishkah River. Those two come in and they create Gray's Harbor. And so he would literally dump the bodies right from the dock or inside the building right into the water.
It's like a little Sweeney Todd action, right? Give him a little haircut and send him down the chute.
It is actually Sweeney Todd. I really seriously, I'm wondering, like, did they take some stuff from Billy Gold that nobody knows about? I don't know. So he would dump them into the river, and then they would disappear for a while. And then all of a sudden, these like bodies started showing up on the shores of the Gray's Harbor area, and people would fish them out of the water, and they wouldn't know who these people were because they're not anybody that anybody knows. And then Billy, good old Billy, he'd come marching along and be like, I know that guy. He's one of the sailors. He's one of my sailors. And make a big hullabaloo about why, you know, what's happening to these guys, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, man of the people right there.
Yeah. And again, big burly man. So like people listened to him. He wasn't just like, hey, I know that guy. Like they listened to him. So there ended up being so many bodies found in the water that they started calling the bodies floaters. And then there became so many floaters that they nicknamed the whole entire group of bodies the Floaters Fleet. So basically, anytime a body would wash up to shore, they'd be like, oh, we got a floater. And then they'd go, oh, add it to the Floaters Fleet. And then they'd always go to Billy because he seemed to recognize these guys as people that he had had an interaction with at some point. Because, you know, he's the sailor union guy. He's the one that helps them when they get off. And
I'm sure
off
he was
the boat.
Just heartbroken, too.
Oh, man, he was upset. He actually ran into the town after one of the bodies was found and demanded that they find a way to light up the docks and that they find a way to light up the areas of Gray's Harbor because somebody is killing these men. And by God, he's not going to stand there and let these men continue to die on his watch.
Just make sure all the lights point away from
the
area.
Union building.
Yeah.
So, he was upset. And the town, actually, of Aberdeen had so many men go missing that it was nicknamed the Port of Missing Men. So it started to get around that, like, don't go to Aberdeen because you might not make it out. But again, nobody knew what was going on. Most of the people that were fished out of the water were actually never identified because even though good old Billy knew who they were, conveniently, he didn't know who they were. He didn't know their names, of course. He's just like, hey, I recognize him. He came into the Union building, but he doesn't know who they are.
Oh, it's not like they had computers, so just a little bit of eraser to the old ledger there. You're not going to see anything.
Yep. So they have a total of 41 on record that they fished out in that floater's fleet, but they actually believe that he is responsible for over 100 bodies because remember how he bartended in the Yukon? They found bodies in the water over there, too, that were also shot in the back of the head. during the time that he was bartending. little convenient, little weird. So this went on. This went on from 1902 to 1910. Now, there are two stories on how he got caught. And again, I had to do multiple research on this. And so I'll tell you both ways, and then I'll tell you how I actually, what I think went down and why I think that there's two different stories. So the first story is that he had an accomplice named John Klingenberg. And John Klingenberg got scared that he was going to be killed by Mr. Billy Goal. And so he went to the cops and told on him, basically. And the reason he felt like this was because there was a man named Charles Hadberg that had witnessed or had seen, I guess he had seen it. He had seen Billy shoot and kill John Hoffman. And when this happened, I guess Mr. Billy basically told Charles, if you don't want to die, you're going to shut your mouth. You're going to do what I say. So he kind of like made him an accomplice, but not really. Well, then he was concerned that Hadberg was going to turn on him. So he goes to Klingenberg, who kind of had an idea that this was going on. And he was like, hey, you need to take care of Mr. Charles Hadberg, because I don't trust him and I think he's going to turn on me. So he wouldn't kill him. Klingenberg didn't want to kill him. So instead, Billy Goal said, just bring him here. Basically, we're going to set him up. I'm going to kill him. And then you're going to help me get rid of his body, you know, down the chute. They didn't go anywhere. They just went into the water. And so he did. He helped him get Hadberg to the Union Building. He watched him get killed and he helped put him in the water. So he was worried that because Mr. BG was going to do the same thing to him. So he went to the cops, told the cops everything, and in return, he received a 20-year sentence for his testimony, basically, against Mr. Goal. Now, that's the first story. The second story is that there was a man who was seen walking into the Union Building, and Billy, you know, did the normal interview to find out who he is, where he was from, and decided he would be a good victim. So he shot the man in the back of the head and decided to pat down his body to make sure that there was not anything else on his body that he could take for any more valuables. And while he was patting down the body, he found a watch in this man's pocket. And he was going to take it. And then he was kind of inspecting the watch and saw that it had a name inscribed on it. And the name was August Schluter. And he was like, better not, because that would be weird if he floats back up and we find out who he is. And then all of a sudden I have his watch. That's going to like literally incriminate me. So he put the watch back, put the body in the water, moved on with his day. Then a couple of days later, a body was found floating. Of course, they're like, got a floater. Oh, bring him to the floaters fleet. And all of a sudden, Mr. Billy, they call for Billy because he's the one who seems to know all these people. So Goal comes down to the embankment, and he's like, yep, I know that guy. I know that guy. I literally just talked to him the other day. I'm really upset. And he's upset. I'm mad. This is not working out. I don't understand these guys. All my guys keep dying. Like, what's going on? So then they say, well, if you know him, do you know his name? Like, who is he? He goes, yeah, I know him. His name's August Schluter. And so the cops had searched the body before Goal came, because by this time they had already started to think that he might have something to do with it, because it was weird that he happened to like know all the victims. And so they already knew that he had this watch on him, and they already knew what the inscription said. But what they didn't tell him was they also knew that August Schluter was the watchmaker. And so his name was inscribed because he was the watchmaker. They had found somehow that his name was actually Fred Nielsen.
Well, good thing he wasn't wearing a Rolex. Yeah, I know that guy. It's Rolex.
Weird. Right? Right. So they immediately say, obviously, the only people who would know that would most likely be the killer. So, okay, we're going to arrest you. So they took him to jail. So those are the two ways that he supposedly got caught. Now, the reason I think there's two stories is because I actually think they both happened, but I think they happened like he got caught with the watch thing talking about this August Schluter guy. He got caught because he was never actually charged with Fred Nielsen's death. So they obviously couldn't stick the death to him.
Yeah, they couldn't prove it just off of a watch name.
Right. So they basically used it to arrest him. And then after he was arrested, I think John Klingenberg came forward and said, hold on, let me tell you some things. Also, by the way, I know of some people he killed, specifically these two guys. So
one of their names happened to be Cassio. No?
No. So he actually only gets charged with two counts of murder, even though they suspect that he's done all 41 because they're all killed the same way. But there's nothing that's linking him to this guy.
Yeah, back then probably, you know, ballistics or any of that stuff was gone, any right. type of fingerprints or anything, they're floating in the water.
Yeah, there's nothing, and they didn't have like a DNA evidence.
You gotta
type
imagine
thing.
Him dragging the bodies down the chute, like they would find evidence somewhere around there unless he had a mop and a bucket.
Also, why is it that he was able to shoot these people in the Union Building in the middle of a town and not one person ever heard the shots? Because it's not like he had a silencer. It's not like this is the early 1900s. So how is it that he was able to shoot these people repeatedly and not one person heard? I call bullshit. Somebody heard, but they didn't want to say anything.
Probably just kept telling the neighbors he was remodeling. One nail at a time.
I mean, I guess, but So anyway, so he was charged with two counts of murder. He was charged with the murder of John Hoffman and Charles Hadberg. And in May of 1910, he was found guilty on both murders. He was sentenced to two life terms. Fun fact, had it been a year earlier, he would have been sentenced to the death penalty. But Washington State had abolished the death penalty the year before. However, he probably still would not have had the death penalty because if they took it away, they just take it away. So they would have just commuted it to a life sentence anyways, I guess.
Yeah, Washington's been always pretty tricky with the death penalty. It's always gone back and forth. I know from 1904 to 2010, Washington executed 78 people through the death penalty. But in 2023, it was taken away again. So it's always been back and forth. So I don't think, you know, once somebody's convicted, that when they bring the death penalty back, I don't think they can retry them for the death penalty.
Yeah, they're not
going to. So they just get the sentence that they're given.
Right. So he gets sent to Walla Walla State, Washington State Penitentiary. If you are from Washington, that is all I have to say. That is it. We all know what Walla Walla State Penitentiary is.
Onions. Lots of onions.
Okay. You got to explain that because people
are
thinking
you're crazy. Walla Walla is known for their onions and their penitentiary.
Yeah, they have Walla Walla sweet onions, but also the Walla Walla State Prison is like, it's like the hardcore prison in Washington, I guess. It's like the one place that if you know somebody who goes to jail, you don't want it to be Walla Walla. That's all. So after a while, he actually ended up having some severe mental health issues. Which prison can do that to you? But you know, you shouldn't kill people and you wouldn't be in prison. So he ended up getting transferred to the Eastern Washington Mental Hospital that's located in Medical Lake, Washington. And that happened in 1927, I think it was early January of 1927. Because he was suffering from like dementia and some other things. So, this is the part that bugs me. He went ahead and just died in March of that same year. So, you know, he like died. He didn't serve out his sentence. He only served 17 years of his sentence because he decided to die from pneumonia and erysipelas, which is a skin infection. I think is what we found out.
Yep.
And he also had some problems from syphilis as well. He was 54 years old. And my biggest pet peeve with not true crime, with murderers or rapists or, you know, shitty people is when they get arrested and they go to trial and they do it the right way and then they get sentenced and then they have the fucking nerve to die before they can even serve out their sentence. It bugs me a lot. And I have a encyclopedia of serial killers here that I do a lot of my research with. And I am like appalled at how many of these serial killers get arrested, tried, convicted, and are sentenced to death, but die of like suicide, or they get killed in jail, which, you know, whatever, vigilante justice, I guess. Or they die of cancer or a heart attack. And it's just like, how dare you? How dare you not serve out the time for what you did, you garbage human?
Well, not just to the families, too, but during this, you know, reign of terror that he was doing in Aberdeen, you know, they're a fishing town probably as well, being right there on the water. So who's going to want to go out there and fish off the docks when there's floaters coming by? So
you're fishing with dead bodies in the
water. Yeah, probably affected more than just, you know, killing people. Probably affected a lot more than that in the city.
Yeah, it's true. So there's just a couple of little tidbits to add to this. In current day right now, if you were to go to Aberdeen, they actually have a place that is called Billy's Bar and Grill, and it is a nod to Billy Gull. And it was rumored that the Bar and Grill is actually located in the official union building that he killed people in, but that has been debunked, and it's actually like across the street or it's down the street. So you're not actually in the building. However, that building, that union building, is still standing. There's another little piece to that, though. So through all this research, there's also a whole other side to this story where there are people, or there's a couple people, who have actually come out and said that they think Billy Gull was set up and they think that he didn't kill anybody and that he took the fall for it. I disagree. Wholeheartedly.
Well, I mean, you got two different places where the same thing's happening and the same person is in those two places.
Yes.
It's pretty hard to argue that.
I disagree wholeheartedly. I just think that, back in the day, maybe there could have been better police work, but you will not be able to sell me that he is not responsible for this stuff, especially because as they did more like searching, like he lived in a cabin, in Aberdeen, and they actually found a bunch of bones and skulls located around his cabin. All the way up until 1912, they continued to find bodies in places that he had been.
Coincidence, probably a bear.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And so, yeah, so for me, I'm kind of like, nah. Not, yeah, and you're not going to sell me on that. But one of the reasons they feel like he's not a serial killer is because he doesn't have that typical reason to kill. So he's a very unique killer because his motive for killing was robbery, which very rarely do you find an actual serial killer killing for robbery. A lot of the times it's for pleasure or sexual sadism or whatever. Also, he was an extremely greedy person across the board. So he did anything and everything he could in every aspect of his life to get as much money and valuables as he could. Killing was one of his ways, which again, not a very typical serial killer. And for those of you asking, yes, he's classified as a serial killer because to be classified as a serial killer, you have to kill, or a person has to kill, two or more people. And there needs to be a cooling off period. So that is why he's classified as a serial killer, because he killed anywhere from 2 to 100 or more over an 8-year period. So that is why he's classified, because a lot of the times people think serial killers have to be like, they have to have necrophilia or all these other things. And it's like, no, it's just if he's killing. And he went on not killing sprees, he would kill and then wait and then kill and then wait. So anyways, that is my little tidbit on good old Billy Gull, who I had never heard of until I researched him. I wish there was more about his life, like as a younger child because that is always interesting to me. But there is nothing, which is actually even more scary to me, that there is nothing about his like life. So my final thoughts on this are, he is a unique serial killer in the fact that he is a greedy serial killer and wants valuables and money. He is not the worst serial killer I have researched, but he is still just a shitty serial killer.
Well, my final thoughts are, I want to go take a peek at that bar and just make sure after I pay, I walk out backwards so I don't get an extra shot on the way out.
To be fair, by the way, I do want to go there one time because when you go in there, they have like Billy Gold paraphernalia all over the place. They even have like pictures of him. They have his like news articles of when he was arrested. Like they have all kinds of stuff in there and it's like an old saloon. It kind of looks like a saloon. So if we're ever in the area of Aberdeen, it would be worth it to stop, I feel like, just to like check it out and say we were there.
Sounds like a field trip in the future.
For real. It is.
All right. Well, we want to thank everybody for taking the time to listen to our story about Billy Gold. We appreciate you. We appreciate having the listeners that we do. Looking forward to our next episode. We're going to be talking about Daniel Barbosa. So
I bet you don't know who he is.
Get to look forward to that. I do not. So it'll be good to hear and good to learn. So again, thanks for showing up and listening to us, and hope everybody has a great day.